Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Teach for America is a nonprofit organization founded in 1990. It places its young core members at schools in marginalized areas to teach for 2 years. Most are recent high-achieving college graduates. In South Dakota, core members are working on the Rosebud, Pine Ridge, Lower Brule, and Standing Rock reservations. Jim Kern is the executive director of Teach for America South Dakota, a Wisconsin native. He lives in Todd County on the Rosebud Reservation. He joins us now from our studios at the Dahl Arts Center in Rapid City. And Jim, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carl.
Now, does Teach for America have a special initiative to work in Native American communities?
Yeah, we do. I mean, as you mentioned, Teach for America has been around nationally since 1990. Started off just in five regions across the country, and now we're in 47 different regions across the United States. And a few of those are serving predominantly Native communities. And so these communities combined, or these Teach for America regions combined, to form what's now called the Native Alliance Initiative. And that's led by Rapid City native Robert Cook. And so that's been an exciting evolution of Teach for America and our national impact over the past 3 years.
Now, when did Teach for America first come to South Dakota?
So we came to South Dakota in 2004, just to Rosebud and Pine Ridge, had only 17 core members that year. And so it's been really exciting. I mean, I moved here in 2007, and basically from 2005 to 2012, we were able to bring in about 25 new teachers every single year, despite a very significant demand. Many of us know, the shortage for teachers on our Native communities or on our reservations here in the state is really significant. Our schools get about 0.8 applications for every open teaching position. And you compare that to where I'm from in rural Wisconsin, we get about 100 applications. So that means that our school leaders and superintendents in Wisconsin, in my hometown, have a lot of choice, and school leaders and superintendents in our Native communities often don't. And so Teach for America, I think, was brought in, at least in part, to combat that problem. And so we've been, and this year it's been the kind of next phase of our work here in South Dakota. We have a core of 41 new teachers now across, as you mentioned, four reservations, not just Rosebud and Pine Ridge. And so this is our biggest core that we've ever had, and it's been really exciting to partner with some new communities this year.
And who are these 41 teachers, these new teachers?
Yeah, it's a very diverse group. And so, you know, a lot of, I guess maybe what not many people know about Teach for America is that, I mean, people often think of it as a very Ivy League driven predominantly affluent white young people. And it's grown to be something very different. And so now nationally, about 40% of our core members identify as people of color, and about 38% identify as coming from a low-income community. And so here in South Dakota, we've got people from all over the place, people who did go to schools on the East Coast or in the Big Ten, but also we've got people like Bryce Drappo, who went to high school in Pierre and identifies as Native himself and went to North Dakota State and is now teaching first grade at Lower Brule. And so it's a very wide mix, but I think what unifies them is this passion and belief in all Native kids, in all low-income kids, that they should have the same opportunities as affluent white kids across our country. And so that's despite the fact that they come from very different backgrounds, there's that unifying belief, that unifying mission that we all share.
Going back to 2004, was it difficult for Teach for America to get started on states' reservations? I'm wondering if the core members were accepted, or if they were just more or less looked on as outsiders.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, in 2004, I mean, I wasn't here in 2004, so I can't speak to the detailed personal experiences, but I think anytime someone is moving to a new community, in particular to a rural community, there's going to be challenges associated with being a new person, and especially if you don't share the identity with folks in that area. But I think it's much more about, and we still struggle with that same thing today. There are places where our teachers are perceived to be outsiders, or maybe have a harder time transitioning into the community. But so much of it is about, the support that we provide. So as an organization, I think that's one of the big lessons we've learned is how to allocate staff resources and how to, leverage the relationships that we have locally to make sure that teachers aren't just left, to their own devices to transition into a new community. But so much of it is about how our teachers approach the work. If they come in, you know, arrogant, or if they come in thinking that they're going to save someone, that's not going to work. And whether they're from Teach for America or whether they're from any entity, that is definitely not going to work in a Native community. And so we really push to make sure that our folks, despite their oftentimes really incredible successes in college or previous professional careers, that they still know that they're first-year teachers. And they're going to have to learn from veteran teachers, and they're going to have to learn from their kids and their kids' families and come in with a lot of humility.
So how closely do the core members of Teach for America on the South Coast reservations, how closely do they work with the communities?
You know, I think it's something that we're definitely working on. And I think I'll take this from a couple different levels, so kind of the macro organizational level. We've got a new initiative that's been really exciting that we've taken on here in South Dakota, just because we – I mean, the mission of Teach for America isn't just about placing teachers in tough schools for 2 years. It's actually, you know, we're working toward a broader vision of every single kid across the country having the same, despite the zip code into which they're born, having access to excellent educational opportunities. And then our mission is to fuel a movement for educational equity. And so in order for us to actually fuel a movement here in South Dakota or to be a part of a movement, that's not going to happen with a bunch of folks who aren't from our communities, right? And so it's so much of it is about the relationships that our teachers are able to build with their kids, with their kids' families, and really not only give them the skills and knowledge and mindsets that they need to choose what they want to do with their lives, but also to get their families fired up about what's possible from our educational system if they can, you know, if they're empowered to do what's necessary there. I think, you know, what we've done as a region at kind of the more macro level, so one very exciting piece of news in the past 3 months is we were able to secure a tribal resolution of support from the Oglala Sioux tribe, which is novel. I mean, that's new for Teach for America nationally and for us here in South Dakota to get a unanimous tribal resolution of support, which is not the end game, but it does show that that we have local support and we have local people who believe in the work that our teachers are doing. And the second thing that I'll mention is we actually have two of our staff now, of our full-time staff of Teach for America South Dakota, are tribal members, one from Rosebud, one from Pine Ridge, and it's their job essentially to help our teachers build relationships, get kids fired up about their goals in a culturally responsive way, and just make sure that we are integrating into the community as opposed to kind of bringing an outside agenda, which we know is not sustainable in the long term.
Now, that endorsement from the Oglala Sioux tribe, do you see that as really helping get more Teach for America people from the reservations to become a part of the program or become involved with it and get more of that inside direction?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, one of our major priorities within Teach for America South Dakota is, I mean, first of all, we have to continue growth. Because there's such a demand, there's such a need for great teachers and great leaders in our Native communities. And so we want to grow to meet that demand. But we also know that that kids benefit from having a teacher who shares their same identity. And so the more that we can recruit teachers who identify as Native or are from communities where we teach, we know that there's an additional kind of impact that can happen from that. And so especially when we see headlines like a tribe endorsing us, I think it does – I mean, that's probably not alone going to produce, you know, a ton of applications locally, but I think it's part of a broader effort for us to you know, hopefully get some core members who come from our tribal colleges or come from Native candidates from Black Hills State or South Dakota State or USD who want to give back to their home community and help inspire their relatives and young kids who share that same background that they have.
One of the criticisms of Teach for America core members is that they're, you know, they have that 2-year commitment and then they move on. Is this part of a way to get around that? Because you do have teachers that, you know, since they're from the community, they do have a stronger commitment.
Yeah, I think it's part of it. I will say that we get this retention question a lot. As you said, it's a very commonly noted criticism. In South Dakota, interestingly, last year, 70% of our teachers stayed for a third year, so beyond that second year, which is above the national average. But I would also say that this is not just a Teach for America thing. If you look at retention in low-income schools nationwide, and especially if you look at retention in low-income schools in South Dakota and our rural schools, I mean, we are, our folks are staying just as long as anybody else, if not longer. And so that's important to know. But we also realize that there's a tremendous benefit to having people who are there for the longer term. And that is one of the reasons why we want to, you know, continue to bolster and make more robust our local recruitment efforts. But I will say, you know, that also isn't the end game for us. Our theory is not that, you know, the opportunity gap between low-income kids and their more affluent peers is going to be closed just by having a bunch of great teachers. That's part of it. But it's also at a macro level, it's about getting leadership in a wide variety of different positions across an ecosystem of education reform who have that deep belief in kids, that deep belief in all kids, that they can not just learn generally, but that our native kids in some of the lowest income communities in the country can't have the same intellectual capability, if not greater, as the most affluent white kids in our country. And that is a belief that I would just, I would call on anyone who's listening to this program, any leader in this state, any person in this state, to start to push your own belief, your own sense of possibility around what native kids can do. Because right now there's kind of two camps. You know, there's a school of thought that says, hey, we can't fix education in low-income communities until we fix poverty. And that is, if you haven't guessed, I mean, that is a different camp from the one within which I currently reside, which says there is a lot we can do within our educational system. And that doesn't mean we shouldn't have efforts to alleviate poverty, but it does mean, a kid only has one chance at fourth grade or eighth grade or whatever, and that means we have to have urgency for right now. And it's going to take an ecosystem of leaders, teachers, principals, superintendents, politicians, folks from all over the place who are attacking this problem and saying this is a solvable problem. We need to put our energy and our resources behind it so that 20 and 30 years from now, when our state, which our demographics are changing dramatically, as many people have noted, and the native communities are booming. And so 20 or 30 years from now, we cannot be still having the same conversation about the incredibly disparate outcomes between native kids and white kids in South Dakota.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. We're talking with Jim Curran, the executive director of Teach for America in South Dakota. I'm wondering, Jim, if there are any measurements or any way you can tell if your efforts on the state's reservations are working?
Yeah, I would love to speak to our impact, and that's, you know, it's something that's really important for us as a nonprofit, but more important for the kids in our classrooms. And so, the way that I talk about our impact is, first of all, we need to always get better. We've got some good impact data to show that when you have a Teach for America Corps member in a classroom, in aggregate, we're going to have strong gains at the student level. But that doesn't mean that we're, you know, becoming complacent or we're kind of resting on our laurels. So one thing to note is that a national study came out in September that was looking at, that was commissioned by the U.S. Department of Education and looking at the impact of Teach for America Corps members, teaching fellows, which is another alternative certification program, and then folks coming from traditional education backgrounds. It was just looking at secondary math, but it found that students in Teach for America teacher classrooms had the equivalent of an additional 2.6 months of instruction, and that's important. There we're a very studied nonprofit, and so there's a lot of data out there. But what it says overall is that we're often about the same in terms of impact as other teachers, or like this study actually says, we're moderately better. So that national data is important, but locally, it is tough in South Dakota to measure disaggregated individual teacher student data, right? We don't have that capability within the state system, but because we do have teachers in BIE schools and we have ways of tracking data outside of just the Dakota STEP test, we are able to show some strong results. And so on average last year, if you look at our 28 teachers who used a test called the MAP test, which is a nationally recognized math and reading assessment often used in BIE schools, our teachers made about 1.1 years of growth. And again, we need to get better, but that's compared to about 0.6 years. And this is the travesty, right, is that kids in low-income communities on average make 0.5, 0.6 years of growth in an entire school year. And that's where that achievement or opportunity gap comes from. So we do have strong results locally, strong results nationally to stand on as well. But, you know, like I said, we're always working to get better because it's going to take a lot more than that to really put kids on the life trajectory to choose what they want to do with their lives.
Given the what seems limited funding for education, I'm wondering if teachers, the Teach for America core members, if they're taking jobs away from other teachers or taking funding from other schools?
Yeah, and we get both of those questions a lot. And so I would say, first of all, this to the idea of jobs, I think when you have 0.8 applications on average, there's a high demand for teaching candidates from anywhere, right? But even if there wasn't a shortage, you still want, in the same way, if Carl, you're hiring for a job at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, you're going to want more than one applicant. You're going to want to take a look at, do whatever you can to build your pool, and then whoever makes the hiring decision, you're going to want to, then you can make your decision based on kind of a broader set of people in that pool. And so I actually think competition is a good thing when it comes to jobs. So this idea that we're potentially taking people's jobs, I think is, look at who's making the hiring decisions and who do they want to hire. So that's kind of one point. But again, we've got such a shortage in South Dakota, we can't fill it even just with Teach for America. So I think there needs to be, we need more candidates from tribal colleges, from our state colleges to say, hey, I want to commit to go teach on a South Dakota reservation and work to change kids' lives there. And when it comes to the funding, I think, the dollars are scarce and we get that. And we feel very grateful to get investments from many private corporations, foundations, philanthropists here in the state of South Dakota, and also get an investment from the state of South Dakota. But I will say that I believe that the return we're able to provide on that investment, because we do leverage state dollars with private money, about 3-1, means that we're able to utilize those dollars where they're needed most in our low-income communities here in the state.
And for you, as before I let you go, your work is you're the executive director of Teach for America South Dakota. What does that mean? What do you do as the executive director?
Yeah, great question. It means I travel around quite a bit. Mm-hmm. My kind of primary responsibilities would be to set the vision and direction alongside our community leaders and our staff. I manage a team of 9 people, so we've got 9 staff here in the state of South Dakota, including our kind of teacher coaches, the community staff I referenced, and then a couple other folks on our team. We do a lot of fundraising, and so our budget's going to be $1.8 million this year. And so that's going to be a lot of fundraising work that has been, we're very grateful to have support from folks locally like the Vukirich Foundation and Walmart, and the Larson Foundation out of Brookings, who have supported us for a long time. So political relationships, fundraising, and just trying to do whatever I can to get people fired up about what's possible for kids in our communities.